this really be the end? To be stuck inside of Moby with the Memphis Blues again. Mona,
welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning, 34 minutes after the hour. Coming up here in about an hour from now, from 1819 News. We'll talk to Will Blakely, my colleague there. ESG policy, we'll get into that. So make sure you keep it locked in. Def and Talk 106.5. Joining us now on the line, he represents the northern part of Mobile County. Very pleased to have on State Representative Shane Stringer, Citronelle, on the line with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me, and roll tide, roll.
I got a lot of I thought you were an Auburn fan, not a Tennessee fan. I was like, okay, let me explain to y'all how this works. Anyway, enough of that. I promised I would not bring that up today, even though I have I have failed on multiple occasions. Representative, this officer involved, this policeman shot up in Hoover. I mean, we hear these stories, too many of these stories too often, where in Alabama, I think, where some officer is involved in a shooting. Is it just me, or do these occurrences seem like they're more frequent, or is it just because there's so much media now? Is there a problem here from your perspective?
Yeah, I think we've had a continuous problem. You know, we're releasing some of these violent offenders too soon and putting them back out in society, and you know, they're reoffending, and we're continuing to have that problem. So, you know, until we can get a balance in everything that we do, we've got to have a balance in our truth and sentencing and keeping people in jail that are violent offenders. We're going to continue to have this problem.
Well, the culture or something going on here where people are using these using firearms against officers. Now, I don't know, a lot of people to say, well, it's the anti-police stuff that is associated with the left and is causing it. Maybe there's some truth to that, but I also think it's just other chemicals or drugs or whatever that influence behavior. That the world's a very dangerous place. It's always been dangerous for law enforcement, but it seems especially more dangerous now than it ever has, just based on some of these reports.
Yeah, I think what some of that is contributed to what is called mojo, which is a synthetic type of weed that people are smoking that is causing some psychological issues. And you know, probably some of the more violent and unreasonable people that I've dealt with have been using the mojo. And, you know, we are just having to deal with that. And, you know, a lot of the ones that, as a chief of police, I had to probate and send to mental health was ones that had been using a prolonged use of mojo. So that's a major problem. And it's really, you know, going around right now being used along with fentanyl. And so we're having to, you know, try to stay on top of that. But that is also one of the more things where people are typically reasonable. Even your bad guys ain't going to, they know if they shoot a cop that all bets are off at that point. But when you get some of these that are strung out on mojo, then they're unreasonable. They're not logically thinking.
What do you do? How do you tamp down on this? I mean, typically, drug trafficking, you know, something the federal government, you would expect to do to handle the heavy lifting part of it. But clearly the war on drugs, not really, you know, we could debate the merits of that, but it is putting a lot of law enforcement here in Alabama in harm's way.
Yeah, I mean, it's like every issue. It has a lot of, I guess, contributing factors that come in play, you know, so we've got to address it on all sides. You know, the Drug Education Council there, Mobile, is very proactive and working to try to help us with that. Mental health with Alter Point is helping us there in Mobile. And so we've got a lot of partners that are attempting to help us with that. You know, it's just one of those things that kind of, you see these trends and phases that come through with the drug use and whenever it does, different drugs affect different ways. And the mojo has really caused a major problem because it really, takes out their rationale of their thinking.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up because I mean, never really hearing much about the mojo, as you call it. We spend a lot of time talking about fentanyl, but, is this something that's widespread? Do you think it warrants more attention?
You know, it kind of comes and goes. It had become a hot item, back in 11, 12, 13, and it kind of died down for a little while. And then, here recently, it's kind of brought, came back a little stronger. And, I think it's like everything. We just continue to see the kind of the ebbs and flows of the drug world. And, it just depends on the availability of certain drugs to, how people get it and what they're using. So, it's just we're going to have to continue to monitor it, continue to watch it. Drug Education Council are heavily involved in our schools, and they are constantly keeping us updated on what they're hearing and what the schools are reporting back to them, which typically relates back to what we're dealing with on the street. So, it's just a partnership to continue to stay on top and try to stay in front of it when we can.
It's kind of interesting. You see these trends. This is like outside of my, I'm not really directly involved in this world, but when you talk to people, you see that, I don't know, like a run of a certain kind of intoxicant. Like black tar heroin was big for a while, and then now you have these different things that really you don't know what that's going to do to the human brain, and it could become a problem, not just for law enforcement, but for the public in general.
Yeah, and that's what we have seen over the years. Like right now, they're basically lacing anything and everything with fentanyl. And, the fentanyl is so deadly at small amounts that it's just an extreme danger. We've seen probably more overdoses from fentanyl than anything. And it's an epidemic across the country, not just in Alabama. So, it's something the federal government's getting involved in. We're trying to address that and see, I think one of the things that Alabama may need to look at, which I know it would be a difficult pass, but anyone that's selling fentanyl, which is an extremely dangerous drug, if someone dies, should be charged with manslaughter or homicide. So, we've got to take some proactive steps to put some checks and balances and consequences in place for people that are selling this and lacing candy with it and giving it to our kids.
Well, let me ask you, if you really, and I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing to do, but I mean, if you increase penalties and you increase that, what kind of burden will that put on the criminal justice system, the prisons, the mental health, drug education? Like, is Alabama equipped to handle the fentanyl crisis?
I would say so. Of course, we're having our problems with our prisons and DOJ's, oversight of that and looking at our prison systems. We've got to do something there. And, but the fact of the matter is, we've got to find a balance in everything that we're doing in our state, and the balance in our prisons is off right now. So we've got to get the balance of our prisons, get our prisons and get them in order, get them operating, and functioning properly to help manage and handle the amount of inmates that will be coming in. So, it's a work in progress. Everything that we do across the state, whether it be the Drug Education Council, whether it be the prison system, law enforcement, and the education system, everything has to work in unison to kind of make everything work the way it's supposed to.
Let's talk about prisons. And it's been a struggle, a traditional struggle from a political standpoint, for conservatives or Republicans to really get on board with any kind of prison, any kind of prison construction program or improvement program. But I always, this is what kind of is the thing that bothers me about this, or the contradiction here, is in this day and age, we recognize the problems of crime and that we want to back the blue, and conservatives really want a strong criminal justice system. It's the left that wants to weaken it and water it down. Why is prison construction not something that improving the Alabama Department of Corrections, which is in shambles right now? There's no other way to put it. Why isn't that more of a conservative mantra? Is there like an old school way of thinking here that, you know, if you start talking about putting money into prisons, that it's going to be Club Med for prisoners or something like that? But it seems to lack this understanding that you want less crime, then you got to have a place to put criminals, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of it. You know, and of course, most politicians don't want, you can't get any, I guess they can't get any bragging rights on building prisons or something. I don't know. But I'm a firm believer that we have got to have somewhere to put these evil and bad people. And, you know, if you're going to commit crimes, you got to do your time. And we have got to have facilities. And, of course, they do have to be humane. They don't have to be Club Med or any of that. But we've got to do something to address the prisons and to make sure that they are effective and able to handle what our needs are.
I mean, what we need just enough to get beyond the requirements of the Eighth Amendment, number one, I think. I don't think it needs to be, but clearly, I mean, we are so far behind, and Donaldson, there's like a death every week up there. You have all these problems from within, and, well, we keep getting told, wait, the new ones are coming, and it's going to be easier, but it's my understanding that the day those prisons open and they start taking inmates are already overcrowded. Like we're looking down the field, what happens after that? There's still going to be problems, it seems.
Yeah. And that's true. One of the things is, you know, we have got to address the, our prisons. That can has been kicked down the road way too long. And truthfully, that is the reason the cost and the, repairs and new facilities, that's the reason that is so high, is because the can has been kicked down the road. We can no longer kick that can down the road. We have got to address it. We've got to get these new prisons, these new mega prisons up and running, and then we've got to go in and address the infrastructure in the older, you know, more out of shape prisons and do that. And one of the constant problems we're having is staffing. You know, even with us, the legislature are allocating enough money to fund 500 new correction officers, I think it was 3 years ago, they were not able to fill those spots. They couldn't even find 500 correction officers to hire, so that was willing to do that job. So we're going to have to look at something to address these staffing problems. We can build the buildings all day long, but if we don't have people to run them, we're still in trouble.
Well, the staffing problems are an interesting topic, because who wants that job? What do you have to do to fill those positions? And I mean, it's not like it's not a great lifestyle to be a prison officer, correction, a prison guard or a corrections officer. It's dangerous. It's hazardous. The only way I see is either make it something that's a little more, a little safer for, you know, an occupation standpoint, or you just pay a lot more, or you figure out ways. Though the other thing I've heard, and I'm curious what you think of this, you know, retired law enforcement create an exception where they could still draw their pension, but also if they were needed, they could fill some of these positions.
Yeah, and that's a good idea. And that's some thoughts that have been around for the last 4 years, you know, just trying to find ways to maybe bringing in retired correction officers or law enforcement that, you know, could. Because as of right now, you know, a retiree can't make over $34,000 somewhere else. So not many law enforcement officers or retired correction officers are going to want to come back into the jail system and work in our prisons for $34,000 a year.
No, not at all. I mean, Representative, when you look at all the other law enforcement vacancies out there and the other positions that need to be filled, you hear about these places that are short on policemen, and you look at it, you know, if you want to go into this as your occupation, you're looking at the list of things you could do. Well, I mean, prison guard is probably pretty far down the list, I would assume.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I've kind of done some brainstorming and thinking about different stuff that we could do as a state to try to help, you know, recruit prison guards. And, you know, some of the stuff we actually need to create some kind of mental health facility or physical health facility for our employees of the prison system that would, you know, they go through so much trauma seeing these deaths and these assaults and everything else that's going on. They've got to have, some mental distress from that. So if we could have counselors on in this facility and maybe have a workout facility and just have, some different, options that is available to our employees there, you know, maybe even like a daycare in the facility that saves the employees from paying $600 a week for daycare. You know, just we've got to come up with some options. We've got to do something other than what we're doing because it's not working.
Yeah, and then it continues. You can't get good employees. You're stuck with bad employees, and that's where I think a lot of the contraband and a lot of the drug trafficking within the walls of the prison is coming from, right?
Absolutely. You know, and one of the things I've said all along is, you know, at some point, you know, bad as I hate to say it, we would just about need to put some metal detectors up and scanners and, you know, have certain people that monitor those as we do shift change to try to cut back on some of the contraband. The good employees are going to appreciate that and understand the bad employees are not going to like it. But at the end of the day, it's going to slow the contraband going into our system.
Representative, we got to leave it there. We're out of time, but I'm really glad you could come on. And next time we'll get you on, we'll get more into the U.S. Highway 45 discussion. But thanks for making time for us.
Not a problem. Thank y'all for having me.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Yeah, and I was country.